You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
It's I Should Be Writing, Season 18, Episode 44. Where we're changing it up a little bit. Join us, won't you?
Well, I should be riding. I should be working on my craft. I should be riding. I should be submitting my next draft. But I'm sitting watching the doctor.
Hi there. Welcome to I Should Be Writing. It's the podcast for wannabe fiction writers. I'm your host, Merle Lafferty. And I'm trying a couple of new things right now. The two new things I'm using are I'm going to be live streaming a show with the live audience over at twitch.tv/mightymer, and I'm going to be making a neater recording of it without all that conversation with the chat here with my recording setup at home. We'll be trying to keep the good news and keep team rejections count, but still want you to send in all of that because it's awesome. But this should be tighter, more concise, and if you have any questions or any feedback or any just writing stuff, email me at mightymer@gmail.com. So to start with, and the second thing we're changing up is I'm going to start doing, I'm going to test out doing episodes in 12 hunks where I'm doing two episodes a week for 6 weeks and then I take a week off. And those 12 episodes will be themed. So right now the theme is back to basics. One thing that will not change is the interviews with authors will still be live streamed and then brought to you via podcast. Because really not fair to ask them to do that twice. But as usual, we start the show with who I am and what I've been up to. My name is Mer, if you're new at this. I have been doing this podcast since 2005 when I had not sold any stories, and I'm still doing it in 2022 when I've sold several short stories, several books. I've done a Star Wars tie-in novel. I've done a Minecraft tie-in novel, and I'm working on building my writing career. So this podcast has pretty much chronicled all of that and discussed what I've learned along the way. I just took a month off writing and podcasting. I was pretty burnt out at the end of May, had a book to finish, which I did a couple of days into June. I think June 5th I turned it in. June 6th. I'm looking at my calendar. It was June 6th that I turned it in. It was the second book in the Midsolar Murders series. It doesn't have a title yet. And then I took some time off. Unfortunately, in that time, my dog got really sick and died. So a lot of my time off was spent stressed out and or grieving, which, you know, life happens. It's unfortunate, but it does. If you have listened to the show and heard some gentle snoring in the background, that was him. We miss him. He was a very good boy, but he was really sick. So that's been my last month. I have rested. I have recovered from all the burnout. I'm really excited about trying some summer projects. Nothing that's sold, nothing that's got a deadline, nothing that anybody is expecting to fit in any mold. On one hand, that might be freeing and exciting. On the other hand, I might just intimidate myself and not do anything, so we'll see. Yesterday we did a live stream and got caught up on team rejection, and one of our most prolific people, Brian, sent in his May and June rejection numbers, which was a total of 23. Congratulations, Brian. I know it can be dispiriting, which is why we try to put a happy face on it. We know it's not happy, but trying to put a happy face on it, trying to make it positive, trying to say, you know, you're doing it. It sucks right now, but you're doing it. And that's what you have to keep reminding yourself. And I'm saying this to anybody who's gotten a rejection. I believe team rejection is up to 204 for the year. If you have any rejections you want to let me know about and would like to get a cheer or an attaboy, attagirl, or attafolks, just let me know. Because we cheer rejections because rejections mean you're a working writer. It's not the fun part of the job, but it means you're a working writer. Rejections are kind of like taxes. Nobody says, I cannot wait to own my own business because the taxes are going to be so much fun. But you know you got to do them. You know they're coming. Rejections are the same way. You don't think, I'm going to build a writing career and get the best rejections in the world. No, you don't do that. But again, it's necessary.
So I'm taking a pause to tell you about a show I think you'll enjoy. Play On Podcasts, epic audio adventures that reimagine Shakespeare's timeless tales, featuring original music composition and the voices of award-winning actors. Each episode explores plays from Macbeth to A Midsummer Night's Dream. It's one of my favorites. In a way that you can actually understand it, and created specifically for the podcast form by some of America's most exciting playwrights, directors, and composers, and performed by stage and screen's best. Check out their current season of King Lear that stars Emmy winner Keith David and Severance star Tramell Tillman. Hear Shakespeare like you've never heard before. Subscribe to Play On Podcasts wherever you get your podcasts.
So we're doing first episode in a batch of 12 about getting back to basics. And today I want to talk about, before you even pick up a pen or turn on the computer, fears, which are not really logical or realistic, and then the real dangers that you can encounter when you try to approach a creative career. A lot of the fears, unfortunately, if you've got them, they're probably not going away. And I hate to say that, but it's true. Or at least, I still have them. There are a lot of fears of failure, which everybody has. Nobody wants to be bad at something. Nobody wants to strap on their ice skates and immediately fall on their butt. Nobody wants that. But everybody knows that you've got practice that you need to do to get good at stuff. Failure will be in there, and it's okay. I still fail. Learning how to deal with failure, that's the key. That's the important thing you want to do. But don't be afraid of it, because it's coming regardless. So the faster you get used to the idea, the easier it'll be. It's not going to be awesome. Like we just said in the last segment, rejections suck. But when you approach the fact that they're part of the job, it might help. Another one of the fears is a weird one, but it's true. And that's a fear of success. Fear of success is more nuanced. It's more subtle. Because everyone says, well, how can you be afraid of both? Well, trust me, you can. Fear of success often ties in with imposter syndrome. Because when you fear success, it means that the spotlight is on you. And once the spotlight's on you, what if everyone finds out that you can't sing or dance or whatever the spotlight's for? And that's terrifying. Another fear, there is a fear of success that is real and most often encountered by people who are not men, people who are not straight, people who are not white. And that's the bigger you get, the more people are going to hate you or hate your work. It's just the law of the bell curve. And if you think I'm wrong, go look at the reviews of Harry Potter or Neil Gaiman or the Bible. There's plenty of people saying this is crap. There's plenty of people saying worse things with worse words. And yes, I know. I had a popular friend, a straight white male, tell me the other day that he'd seen the ugly side of the internet once he got popular. That is another fear of success. But it's something you can protect yourself from. And we've done episodes on social media. I encourage you to go back in the archives and look about how to shut down your social media to protect yourself as your career grows and you get more followers. Most every single platform has security levels in check. You just have to go in there and find them. And they may not fix everything, but they'll protect you from a lot of stuff. I feel like sometimes my entire life has been being afraid to take a step forward for whatever reason. It's kind of a joke between me and my husband that back in 96, I think? 96 or 98? Whenever Starship Titanic, the computer game, came out, we were at the Electronic Entertainment Expo in Atlanta, Georgia, and Douglas Adams was there promoting it. And we walked by him at his booth. He was very tall, very tall man. And we said, "Oh my God, that was Douglas Adams. Can you believe that? That's Douglas Adams. We just saw Douglas Adams." And then we walked about 50 yards more. And then we like, wait a minute. When are we going to get a chance to see him again? We really should get brave, go back and say hi and say that we're fans. And then we went back and he was gone. He'd left to catch his plane back to England. And then, Douglas Adams was the age I am now, actually. Wow. And he had a heart attack on his treadmill and died. And so whenever we have that feeling of fear of doing something or meeting someone or just having the bravery to say hi, we remind each other, you know, don't want to let the Douglas Adams thing happen again. You think I would have learned, but, you know, not everything. I was just about to say something ridiculous, like not everything's the same, but obviously. The next thing that happened that I remember is I had a friend, Laura Schoberg, who did Brunching Shuttlecocks back in the early aughts. And I had an idea for a piece for Brunching Shuttlecocks, and Laura was just, I was so amazed that he was, would deign to be my friend and talk to me about nerdy stuff. And I told him an idea I had about writing something about Diablo, and he thought it sounded funny and said to do it. And then I sat on it for months, and I think it was that fear of the spotlight, because Lore was offering me a large spotlight. Brunching Shuttlecocks was very popular back then. Unfortunately, because of time and servers and I don't know what, but internet stuff, you really can't find hardly any of the content. But trust me, it was good. When I finally got up the nerve to actually go through with it and write the thing and tell Laura about it, he laughed. It wasn't a mean laugh. It was just kind of a disbelieving laugh, like, yeah, that's not timely anymore. That would have been funny months ago. It's not really funny now. It's not timely. And I was really embarrassed. And I didn't learn anything, because now I'm still sitting on ideas because I'm too afraid to do them. I'm too afraid that I'm going to do them and no one's going to care. I'm afraid I'm going to do them and they're going to get attention and then everyone's going to hate it. That's a very weird, specific kind of fear. But I'm afraid of all sorts of things. But I'm hoping to take this summer and move past that and try some new stuff. So let's talk about the real risks, the real worries when you start a creative career. And the first one is perfectionism. I would like to encourage everybody to go pause the podcast and go search for Ira Glass and The Gap, because Ira Glass said it better than anybody else has ever said it that I know of, which is when you have a love for something creative, art, music, writing, whatever, you can recognize when it's good. You say, that is a good story. I can tell that's a good story because X, Y, and Z. And in writing more than anything else, you have the tools with which to write a story. You have the language you speak, and you have sentence structure. And this is why everybody thinks they can be a writer, because they know all the words, they know what they mean, they can put sentences together, and that's just what writing is, right? Spoiler, it's not. But so when people sit down to try to actually do their art, when they can recognize what good art is, they get very frustrated when they can't create what they see in their minds or what they're hearing in their minds, and they can't recreate something that is similar to another story or piece that they know is good. And it's frustrating. And again, that's the thing where you need to do practice. You need to figure out, you need to let yourself make mistakes. And perfectionism is a very, very nasty thing. And I think we create it in the schools. And I can only speak for American schools here, but failing and then learning from the failure is not really encouraged here. You know, they want you to get it right and get it right the first time. And if you don't get it right, then there's something wrong with you. And especially as an adult, you know, you can hold down a job, you can drive a car or operate some sort of complicated thing they don't let kids do. So surely when you try something new, you're going to be good at it. And then we realize we're not. And it's really disappointing. And I mentioned this before, but I don't know a better example of the dangers of perfectionism. There's a Australian baking show called Zumbo's Just Desserts, where it's a dessert competition where the main part of the thing is everybody makes a dessert head-to-head, and then at the end they pick the best dessert, but they also pick the two worst desserts, and then the two people who did the two worst desserts have to cook again, and the worst one gets kicked off the show. And there was a woman who was consistently best dessert. I would safely say she was best dessert 75% of the time. She was so perfect. And the one day that she did not do well, and you could tell she was either not going to finish or wasn't doing well, you knew she was going to be in the next level of competition where you could be kicked off, she had a breakdown. She was talking to herself. She was fighting back tears as she was cooking. And everybody else who had been either in the middle or they were really good, except they'd had some bad days and gotten into the final event to see who's going home more than once, they're looking at her like, it's not the end of the world. What the hell is she so upset about? It's not like she's getting kicked off the show now. She's going to get another chance. They were thinking this because they'd failed before and they'd learned from it. And they'd also learned that failure doesn't kill you. So I worry more about people who are consistently good from the get-go. Because just the law of averages, we're going to fail. You're going to fail at some point. Not every, even if you write awesome stuff, not everything you write is going to be loved as much as other things. But you learn and you keep creating. But if you're perfect all the time and you're actually perfect, not you don't just strive to get perfect, you achieve perfection. That's actually dangerous because you don't know how to fail. You don't know how to pick yourself up after you fall. So which is why allowing yourself to be bad at something is healthier and helps you learn better than striving for and achieving perfection. Another thing achieving perfection or striving for perfection does is it makes you obsess about things like your first chapter or your first paragraph. If you write the perfect first chapter and you go over it and over and over and over and over it, and then you send it to an agent, and the agent's like, this is great, send me your whole book. I'm betting you didn't go over the rest of your book like you did that first chapter, and it's gonna show. I've known people to take weeks, and I'm not exaggerating at all, weeks to perfect their first paragraph. It was a good paragraph when I read it. But I'm like, this took you weeks? That's another danger of perfectionism, is not allowing yourself to write more than the beginning, because you have to fix the beginning. And this is a sort of siren's call to the beginner, because sometimes when you work through a story, when you get to the middle, you realize you want to go into a direction that is not supported by the beginning that you wrote. And your first thought is, I got to go back and fix the beginning. That's not what you should do. You should just make a note to yourself. Hey, I'm changing this. They're not from Iowa after all. They're from Florida because it fits the story better. And then you write the next part. Because you will get caught in a loop of going back to the beginning to fix things every time you write something that is not quite right. Another danger is comparing yourself to somebody. And this is something we all do and we all suffer from. We all compare ourselves. I still compare myself to other people, which is very dangerous. Because I know that it doesn't make sense. I know that there's so many factors at work creating what you write and how you write and how much you write and how often you write. And those factors include your daily responsibilities, whether you're a caregiver to someone older or someone younger or someone your age. Whether you have something like depression or manic depression or ADHD or something that means your brain is firing differently than a lot of people and therefore is going to work differently than a lot of people's. Some people have day jobs and can't write a lot every day. Some people have chronic pain or fatigue and can't write every day and really, really don't like it when people tell them that that's the only way to start a writing career is to write every day. Well, that's a little ableist. Try to move away from that because everybody's different. And so when you say you need to write every day, think about people who are not as able to write as often as you are. Think about them and be a little kinder. And when you think that person just wrote this many books in this many months and I'm so jealous and I don't know why my career is crap, remind yourself, you don't know who they've got supporting them. You don't know what their responsibilities are. You don't know how the chemicals in their brains fire. All you know is how you can work. And if you don't know that, then try a couple things out. But comparing yourself is wasted energy and wasted brain cycles. Because you won't come up with anything. It won't be useful or constructive at all in any way to compare yourself to somebody else. There's no ideal destination when you do something like that. And lastly, I'll bring up reading. And I do talk about how you need to know story structure to make television and movies and computer games. But if you want to write a book, you need to learn how books are written. And you need to be reading what's being published today. And with our attention spans, that's hard. You know, the smartphone has pretty much whittled our attention span to nothing. I am much better now with audiobooks than anything else. But sometimes it's a struggle to remind myself, you know, that there are good books out there that I need to read. Both for my own pleasure, but also because I need to keep up with what's happening in fiction. A lot of people worry, it's like, I'm not going to read what's going on because I don't want to copy it. But it's not... this could be an entire episode itself. People don't want something shiny and new. Completely new. Entirely new. They want something that it feels familiar with a new spin. So if you try to give them something entirely new because you think they're going to be tired of whatever's hot right now, you're going to be disappointed. But if you give them something that's similar to what's hot right now and then put your own spin on it, that will probably do a lot better. And I'm not saying right to the market. This all has to happen organically in your head. You know, you need to keep aware of what people are, the stories people are telling. And maybe just subconsciously keep aware of it. I don't take notes when I read other people's stuff, but I learn. It sort of gets filed in the back of my brain. Okay, well, there's a lot of space operas out right now. I'm going to read the space operas and see what people are doing in space opera. So you need to read. And I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, but I've made this entire podcast on mentioning all the things I'm embarrassed about, so why stop now? Tomorrow I'm going to start again locking my devices away. Probably my iPad and my Switch. I'm going to lock it away at night and not have it be released until the afternoon. Because I've been trying to make a routine in the morning, and, you know, the dog dying was a big part of what shattered that. But still, it's been a struggle. And this morning I realized that media's, they're sometimes jerks, people who write this stuff. Because as an adult diagnosed with ADHD, I've learned that routines are your best friends. If you know specifically what's supposed to happen, you don't need to wonder, what should I do next? And if you're not neurodivergent, yes, we can look at a bunch of things and academically say, well, clearly that's the priority. But inside your brain, you're thinking, I'm not sure. I've noticed this in myself when I'm late for something. I'll look at the clock and go, I've got time, even though I know I don't. Mathematically, I don't have time. Why am I looking at the clock and thinking, I've still got time to do that? The same thing happens with prioritization, and routines remove that, because you don't need to worry about what to do next, because you just do the next thing on your routine. And I was thinking about the movie Stranger Than Fiction with Will Ferrell and Emma Thompson, where she's writing about him as if, you know, he has no joy in his life because he does the same thing every morning. And I'm thinking, now, looking at my life, looking at that story, I'm thinking, I would love to have an incredibly boring routine that I do the same every day. Because that would mean I would get stuff done. That would mean I wouldn't be wearing my pajamas into the afternoon. It would mean I might get into a exercise schedule and walk my dog and eat dinner at the same time every night. Those are all good things. So I know I'm getting off topic a little bit. But along the same lines, routines are good if you can make one. When I was working on my book, I had more or less gotten a routine of writing first thing in the morning, which I've always wanted to do, and I was really happy with that. But now that I've taken a time off, I have to work to achieve that again. So locking stuff up at night, trying to do betterment stuff in the morning, and not be distracted. That's me. Now, since I'm not live streaming anymore, I want to say this part is reserved for people who want their questions answered or feedback or whatever. But I don't have any questions like that, so I encourage you to email me, mightymer@gmail.com, to ask me your questions. If you can make the live streams, I encourage it. It's lots of fun. They are twitch.tv/mightymer, and they're Tuesday, Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. I also have a podcast called Ditch Diggers that I do with various friends in the writing community, where we talk about the business part of a writing career. The latest one I'm excited to put up is with Grant Bachoco, who longtime podcast listeners will recognize as the creator of Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd, but is now blowing up on TikTok as a puppeteer doing the toily, a toilet paper roll. And you can find all of this at Merverse.com. Also, I've got books. Station Eternity comes out in about 89 days from me recording this. I noticed yesterday it was 90 days. It is Murder, She Wrote in on Babylon 5. I'm excited about its coming out. I haven't written an original book. I haven't had an original book come out since January 2017, so I'm a little anxious, but I'm excited. And hoping people are enjoying it. Or will enjoy it. But you can pre-order that anywhere right now. If you want to pre-order a signed copy, you can go to flyleafbooks.com and I'll have a link for that in the show notes. And then I will sign your copy and send it to you. Or Flyleaf will send it to you. They're my delightful, awesome indie bookstore. I keep the lights on via Patreon. If you want to support me via Patreon, I would very much appreciate it. Other ways you can support the show are watch me on Twitch and subscribe there, or just tell a friend. Leave a review if you like it. But patreon.com/mightymer, you can get all of the archives, you can get early episodes, expanded episodes. And then I think what people love the most is access to the Discord, where a bunch of like-minded people just hang out and talk about writing or whatever is on their minds. I think the mail's here. I don't know if you can hear that. Anyway, your support helps me do this, and I really appreciate all of you who give your support or all of you who are considering it. Or just tell a friend. Things are tough right now. I know not everybody has spendable money. But anyway, I will see you next time. We'll be having, it'll be a live show with Stephanie Moyers as the guest, and then next week I'll be doing a regular old non-live, immaculately polished episode just like this one. But in the meantime, think about what I said. And take a chance, because you should be writing. I Should Be Writing is available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks. And hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at Merverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support.
Doctor Who.